future, and we want to hear your voice. If you have feedback about a program, let us know. Do you want to hear more of a certain kind of music? Do you have a story to share about why the song we just played is a road trip favorite? Tell us how we're doing. We'd love to hear from the listeners who make CKUA strong. We want to be a responsive and inclusive community. Email us with your feedback at ckua.com.
I'm Oscar Tibbeth. Join me Monday afternoon at 2 o'clock for another hour of great music from right here in our neighborhood. Catch Audrey Ochoa, Elk Run Riot, Napalm, Wart Hanum, and more, plus our featured artist, Nuella Charles.
This is the CKUA Radio Network, Alberta's voice for music, arts, and culture. 99.3 FM in Lethbridge, and on the go with the CKUA app.
We sit in this courtyard. Two forms, shadow outlines with one soul. Bird sound, leaf moving, early evening star, fragrant damp, and the sweet sickle curve of moon. You and I, in a round, unselved idling in the garden beauty detail. The raw carrots laugh and we laugh inside laughter. The two of us on a bench in Konya, yet amazingly in Khorasan and Iraq. As well, friends abiding this form, yet also in another, outside of time, you and I.
And Magamon, Virginia, Saskatchewan, Vancouver Island, Fort McMurray, Horsham, England, Thailand, Israel, New Zealand, Mexico, North Carolina, the West Indies, Texas, you and I, all over the place, and as Rumi said, outside of time and place and form. Hi, I'm Bob Chalmick. This is The Road Home, Jalaluddin Rumi's poem from 700 years ago. Open the door to the garden today. You heard the blue jay in the background here at the cabin in the woods, not far from a lake called Magamon in the boreal forest. Coleman Barks' Rumi had parrots laughing in his garden. Well, I think birds will have a central role in today's road home. Parrots, swifts, endangered species from Central and South America. And even though the birds are pretty quiet here on this August day, evening, there's bound to be some input from the locals. If you listen carefully, you may hear a hummingbird coming to the theater. We'll see as it unfolds. But lots of fine music we've never heard before. I hope you can join me here, sitting together for a couple of hours of music and spoken word on this August road home. Welcome. Here's some laughing parrots. Thick-billed green and red mountain parrot of Mexico, the Cotora serrana occidental. This is music from a remarkable collection called A Guide to the Bird Song of Mexico, Central America, and the Caribbean. Conservationists collected the sounds of endangered or threatened species and handed them out to various producers and composers in the regions. And the compositions were inspired by the sounds of the birds. This is Gioni, I think it's pronounced, but it's Mexico, so the J may supposed to sound somewhat different than I pronounced it. Maybe the parrots would know better. Cotorra serrana occidental, thick-billed mountain parrots of Mexico. Let's listen. Ernesto Cardenal, 1925 to 2020, was a poet, priest, and politician in Nicaragua. He preached liberation theology and heavily symbolic Marxist Christianity. He was part of the Liberant that overthrew the Somoza government in 1979. He would become the culture minister in the revolutionary government, for which he was publicly rebuked by the Vatican. This poem about the black market in endangered parrots becomes a symbol and analogy for the revolution in which he took part in Nicaragua. It's called The Parrots. My friend Michelle is an army officer in Somoto, up near the Honduran border, and he told me he had found some contraband parrots waiting to be smuggled to the United States to learn to speak English there. There were 186 parrots, with 47 already dead in their cages. He drove them back where they had been taken from, and as the lorry approached a place known as the Plains, near the mountains, which were these parrots' home, behind those plains, the mountains stand up huge. The parrots got excited, started beating their wings and shoving against their cage sides. When the cages were let open, they all shot out like an arrow shower, straight for their mountains. The revolution did the same for us, I think. It freed us from the cages where they trapped us to talk English. It gave us back the country from which we were uprooted. Their green mountains restored to the parrots by parrot green comrades. But there were 47 that died. The Parrots, by the Nicaraguan poet priest of liberation, Ernesto Cardenal. We slip into some Mexican music by Patty Griffin with Raul Malo, Virgin de Guadalupe.
Pecador, eres mi encanto. Aquí te dejo mi corazón. Adiós, oh Virgen incomparable. Dame, Señora. Dame, Señora.
Vivir otra vez.
little Tex-Mex Sway from Brave Combo out of Denton, Texas. And before that, Patty Griffin joined by Raul Mallow with the Virgen de Guadalupe. I'm Bob Chelmick. We are on the road home, spending a bit of time in Central America, inspired by some endangered birds in the region. The endangered Mexican parrots and Ernesto Cardenal's poem certainly echoed Rumi's The Indian Parrots, as translated by Coleman Barks, an often requested story poem. I will share that with you again in a moment or two, but first, this is the Garifuna Collective with their music inspired by the sound of the threatened black catbird of Mexico. The Garifuna Collective. Mexican black catbird and the Garifuna Collective. Edmonton novelist and poet Thomas Trofimok wrote on the balcony in Mexico at sunset back in 2010. There ought to be poetry in this warm, silky air, and the jungle vibrating with frog sound and bird song, embroiled in lusty relationships with the color green, ought to be a Somerset Maugham short story, eloquent and dignified and old, or the beginning refrains of a Lawrence Durrell novel, lost in 1,053 details, each one lovely. And the moon, hung sideways in a hazy, almost indigo sky, has lost its mind. The moon tilts, is wrong about everything, and insists that the stars ride in the back seat. But the moon has been drinking. The stars are sad and a bit afraid, and so they listen, but they hesitate and stutter and are apprehensive in the night. There ought to be a poem in this silky, warm air, this air with its humid thickness, this air that is luxurious and sensual and insists on touching everything with its sticky fingers. But damned if I can find it. An excerpt from On the Balcony in Mexico at Sunset, Thomas Trofimok. Thank you.
down this way before. Is there any truth to that, Señor? Señor, Señor, do you know where she's hiding? How long are we gonna be riding? How long must I keep my eyes glued to the door? Will there be any comfort there, Señor? Hanging from around her neck. There's a marching band still playing in that vacant lot. But she held me in her arms one time and said, forgive me not. Señor, Señor, I can see that painted wagon, smell the tail of the dragon. I can't stand the suspense here anymore. Can you tell me who to contact here, Señor? Let me get it together. I gotta pick myself up off the floor. I'm ready when you are, Señor. Tell me what we're waiting for, Señor. It seems like I've been down this road before. Is there any truth to that, Señor?
A Bob Dylan poem with Tim O'Brien. Did I say poem? Well, sure it is. I mean, who's to argue with a Nobel Prize winner for literature? The song is called Señor, and before that, Ry Cooder on guitar with the Chieftains. This bird is from Cuba. It's the endangered Zapata wren, a.k.a. the Firminia. It's a third selection from that remarkable collection, A Guide to the Bird Song of Mexico, Central America, and the Caribbean. Pata Wren inspired DJ Jiggle to create this composition. Maybe Jiggle isn't the right way to pronounce it. J-I-G-U-L. I like Jiggle, but my Spanish is non-existent. Here's a poem by Craig Arnold, The Invisible Birds of Central America. The bird who creaks like a rusty playground swing, the bird who sharpens the knife, the bird who blows on the mouths of milk bottles, the bird who bawls like a cat, like a cartoon baby. The bird who rubs the wine glass, the bird who curlicues, the bird who quacks like a duck but is not a duck. The bird who pinks on a jeweler's hammer. They hide behind the sunlight scattered throughout the canopy. At the thud of your feet, they fall thoughtful and quiet, coming to life again only when you have passed. Perhaps they are not multiple, but one, a many-mooded trickster, whose voice is rich and infinitely various, whose feathers liquefy the rainbow, rippling scarlet, emerald, indigo, whose streaming tail is rare as a comet's, a single glimpse of which is all that you could wish for, the one thing missing to make your eyes at last feel full, to meet this wild need of yours for wonder. The Invisible Birds of Central America, Craig Arnold. The Zapata Wren of Cuba, with the music of DJ Jiggle. We're on the road home together, and here's quite a combination from Mabu Cape Breton, singing in English and Scots Gaelic. It's Heather Rankin with Alex Cuba, Alexis Puentes, originally from Cuba, very much Canadian now, multiple Juno Award winner, singing in his native tongue. The lullaby is Dark Eyes. Heather Rankin and Alex Cuba. I'm Bob Chelmick. We are traveling together on the road home. From the anthology, The Soul is Here for Its Own Joy, Sacred Poems from Many Cultures, edited by Robert Bly. This is William Stafford's Roll Call. Red Wolf came, and Passenger Pigeon, the Dodo Bird, all the gone or endangered, came and crowded around in a circle. The Bison, the Irish Elk, waited silent. The Great White Bear, fluid and strong, sliding from the sea, streaming and creeping in the gathering darkness, nose down, bowing to earth, its tapered head, where the black-footed ferret, paws folded, stood in the center, surveying the multitude, and spoke for us all. Dearly beloved, it said. Roll Call by William Stafford.
There's a knot in my gut as I gaze out today on the plains of the city, all polychrome gray. When the skin is peeled off it,
Eskimo curlew. Passenger pigeon. Great auk.
And prayers. Before that, Bruce Coburn, Beautiful Creatures. Here's poet Don McKay, poet and bird watcher. This is from his recording Songs for the Songs of Birds.
Why do we love birds? Many, many reasons I think why we do, but one that I've been thinking about is that we love them because they are intimate with the air, and we see that intimacy in both their songs and their flight. Air is, we depend on it, and we have to have it, of course, to breathe, but it's mostly invisible. We're unaware of it most of the time. But birds make us aware of it, and they make us sense how crucial it is. They articulate the very atmosphere around us. So I thought, well, let's perform the thought experiment, which is often recommended if you want to see how much you value something, and that is to imagine us without it, to imagine life without birds, if they had all become extinct as opposed to just some, courtesy of us. So the poem is called In Aornis, which means land without birds. And this poem is a reference to a lichen, Xanthoria, which is that orange lichen you can see all around on rocks where birds have sat and shat. That's how the lichen gets its nitrogen. Okay, In Aornis, where each tangle in the foliage is not a nest, where the wind is ridden by machines. Aornis, birdless land, whose uninflected sky extends like rhetoric to the horizon, ide, fix, tight as Tupperware. Each item insular, insomniac, attended by echo and clock. The letters would rather be numbers. The numbers disavow Pythagoras. Aornis, where you don't need mysticism and you don't need music to do math. The unsung sun, it turns out, comes up anyway, while the rocks and lintels, UV bleached and bird shit free, are host to no Xanthoria. In Aornis, when it snows, the snow weighs on the branches and the branches bend beneath the weight. They know no junco will descend to instigate the tiny blizzard like a sneeze, which frees them. Only now and then, one will shrug and shed its load, like an old man who recalls an antique joke and silently silvers the air.
Poet Don McKay, thinking the unthinkable, In Aornis. On the road home, here are the Great Lake Swimmers.
Thank you.
Something quite extraordinary is happening outside the cabin at this moment on this August day. It started long after I noticed this theme of birds started to take shape on the road home, at least so far. What is happening is a visitation of swallows. Now, we have tree swallows galore in late spring and early summer for good reason. There are 3 or 4 dozen birdhouses, bird boxes that I put out hoping to encourage the mountain bluebirds to take up residence. Mostly, however, and not to my chagrin, mostly, however, the tree swallows every year show up in late May to inhabit the boxes, maybe early May. And so we are treated to their chittering as they fly, to their beautiful silhouette on the barbed wire or the fence posts. And we delight in their aerial acrobatics. They are the aerialists, the swallows, and the tree swallows are kind of standoffish, which we like. The barn swallows want to hang out and poop all over the deck at the cabin. They put their little mud nests up in the gable corners, but not the tree swallows. However, those birds usually just kind of fade away, disappear by the end of July, as they did this year. And when we were on the veranda enjoying our brunch today, I noticed hordes of swallows doing their dips and dives and swoops en masse in front of the cabin, and they're still at it. I've wondered where they go at the end of July. I have assumed, I think it's easy to assume, they just head to where there's more food, namely by the lake, Nakaman Lake or Kakina, a smaller typical prairie waterfowl lake a little to our southeast. And I figure they just roost in the trees, and maybe that's what they've done. And for some reason, a windy day today, they've all come back. Maybe there's some kind of insect that's just hatched and is providing them here with an easy meal. I can't see what they're eating. So it's a visitation of tree swallows en masse. And, well, maybe they're just here because they like the theme that's developing on this August road home. Normally, the vista is devoid of that kind of activity in August, but today they're treating us to an aerial display. Love it. And little do they know, there's a focus on a close cousin of theirs that we don't see around here, the swift, coming up on the road home. From a wonderful article, poetic prose, that I have read in the New York Times magazine. We are traveling the road home together, in many respects, by air today. I'm Bob Chelmick, and here's Jen Grant with Rose Cousins, Hummingbird.
I laid you down in the city of lakes where it called, the newfound station, the wonder lake of home. We go down to the water and sit on the rocks, where the loons and the beavers and buttercups are gold. They come and go. Fly, I'm in bird, sweet blue sky. Eagle fly, I'm in
Blossom days, hummingbirds rest above where we lay. You say it's okay, no need to fret. As we fight the balance and each step we make, swinging back and forth in a palmetted tree.
Unrejoiced. It's about swallows and maybe your mother.
It is about my mother. This is for the unrejoiced. My name is Sukoyet and I'm reading from the True Names of Birds. I should tell you, this is the tree I used to look at when I was writing.
On the cover of the magazine?
On the cover of the book. Yeah, there's a beautiful painting that my brother-in-law did.
Yeah.
I haven't seen this book in a while. For the unrejoiced. Swallows nesting in the eaves of my mother's house have given her more joy than a room full of daughters. She watches them fly into morning and at dusk welcomes their return. Every day she feels this joy. I want a day when it's that easy to find, a day when your hand on my hip while I sleep is enough, the need more milk and bread words we speak into the phone drift from the wires between us and rain reminders of the unrejoice onto our skin. The stems holding up the flowers and the net of bones that make up our hands. A day, if the birds don't return, we celebrate their flight.
Sue Goyett, reading from The True Names of Birds. We are on the road home together. I'm Bob Chelmick. Yes, I promised Rumi's story of the Indian parrots a favorite. It's coming. Sorry it's taken so long, I didn't think it would. But other elements just seem to want to be first. It's the way of the road. The Road Home is heard Sunday nights at 8 for 2 hours on CKUA in Alberta or CKUA.com anywhere. And early weekday mornings on CKUA, The Road Home is heard at 5, except Mondays when it's a repeat of the 2-hour program from the night before, and therefore starts at 4 a.m. And of course, The Road Home streams 24/7 via the website roadhome.fm. And there's the beautiful app for your mobile device to listen to The Road Home at any time, anywhere. On Instagram, pictures from around here at the Two Horse Ranch, the cabin in the bird-filled boreal, just look up at Bob and the Dogs, B-O-B-N the Dogs, on Instagram. Here's guitarist Pat Metheny with music by Simon and Garfunkel. This is one of the most memorable, one of the most beautiful stories, parables, if you like, from Rumi's Mathnawi. That's Jalaluddin Rumi, and the Mathnawi is his immense volume of verse. The Indian Parrot is translated by Coleman Barks, the chief translator of this 13th century Persian Sufi master. There was a merchant setting out for India. He asked each male and female servant what they wanted to be brought as a gift. Each told him a different exotic object, a piece of silk, a brass figurine, a pearl necklace. Then he asked his beautiful caged parrot, the one with such a lovely voice, and she said, "You see the Indian parrots, describe my cage. Say that I need guidance here in my separation from them. Ask how our friendship can continue with me so confined and them flying about freely in the meadow mist. Tell them that I remember well our mornings moving together from tree to tree. Tell them to drink one cup of ecstatic wine in honor of me here in the dregs of my life. Tell them that sound of their quarreling trees would be sweeter to hear than any music." This parrot is the spirit bird in all of us, that part that wants to return to freedom and is the freedom. What she wants from India is herself. So this parrot gave her message to the merchant, and when he reached India, he saw a field full of parrots. He stopped and called out what she had told him. One of the nearest parrots shivered and stiffened and fell down dead. The merchant said, "This one is surely kin to my parrot. I shouldn't have spoken." He finished his trading and returned home with the presents for his workers. When he got to the parrot, she demanded her gift. "What happened when you told my story to the Indian parrots?" "I'm afraid to say, master, you must. When I spoke your complaint to the field of chattering parrots, it broke one of their hearts. She must have been a close companion or a relative, for when she heard about you, she grew quiet and trembled and died." As the caged parrot heard this, she herself quivered and sank to the cage floor. This merchant was a good man. He grieved deeply for his parrot, murmuring distracted phrases, self-contradictory, cold, then loving, clear, then murky with symbolism. A drowning man reaches for anything. The friend loves this flailing about better than any lying still. The one who lives inside existence stays constantly in motion, and whatever you do, that king watches through the window. When the merchant threw the dead parrot out of the cage, it spread its wings and glided to the nearby tree. The merchant suddenly understood the mystery. "Sweet singer, what was in the message that taught you this trick?" "She told me that it was the charm of my voice that kept me caged. Give it up and be released." The parrot told the merchants one or two more spiritual truths, then a tender goodbye. "God protect you," said the merchant, "as you go on your new way. I hope to follow you." The Indian Parrot, from the Mathnawi of Jalaluddin Rumi, a translation by Coleman Barks that appears in his book from 1991, One-Handed Basket Weaving. Thank you.
take my ears, I won't use them. They no longer hear the music, just silence and walls, no footsteps in the halls. Take my head. Big empty space. I belong. I belong to
Rose Cousins, White Flag. The music underneath the story of the Indian parrot was by Philip Glass, Metamorphosis 2, with pianist Jenny Lynn. The Milk Carton Kids are up, and a bit later, The Mysterious Life of the Birds That Never Come Down. The Swift, amazing story. But here are the kids on the road home.
There's a light that's shining now, and a calm wind in the pine, for the fate of a fearsome travesty seems to have forgotten me, seems to have forgotten me. If it hasn't learned by now where I've hid so very long, I'll come safely out into the silence found in the wake of its passing on, in the wake of its passing on. A Spartan smile and westward stare hold a promise in the air. That's the way they used to find their own way home, by the stars on their own. Stars on. While I pray for a promised land to replace all I have made, darkness steals the light I bear, and the hope of a lifetime fades. The hope us from being unafraid of the heartache that can plague a man. The heartache that can plague a man. A Spartan smile and westward stare hold a promise in the air. That's the way they used to find their own way home by the stars on their own. By the stars on their own.
The Milk Carton Kids live from Lincoln Theater, released in July of 2020. And this from Jamie Stone, an August 2020 release. Awake is the CD, Earthlight the song, Jamie Stone.
First, you start by watching the waxing of the moon. It's an ancient observation. You dance around the room. There's a certain expectation you find it's wearing thin, but you know it's just a moment we're all here living in. First birth constellation, if those stars could see you now, would they circle round your orbit, bright seven's starry plow? It was always hard to reach you, a hand I couldn't lend, as the seas and come unhinge now.
That is the sound of a common swift. Common, I wouldn't call them. Not this bird. This sound is courtesy of the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, allaboutbirds.org, I think. The amazing aerialist, the swift. The mysterious life of birds who never come down. I'd like to share with you an inspiring insight into the life of a swift, or the whole flock of swifts. They travel in numbers. I've not seen a swift around here, but this essay, The Mysterious Life of Birds Who Never Come Down, inspired me to look up swift in my bird book. I understand they're common and in great numbers in the eastern parts of the United States and Canada, southern eastern Canada, and there are swifts in the Canadian Rockies, southwest corner of Alberta, but not much else. Their close cousins, the swallows, are frequent nesters here, but the swift is a little larger and amazingly spend virtually all of their time in the sky. How can this be? Helen MacDonald explains in this article from the New York Times Magazine, The Mysterious Life of Birds Who Never Come Down. I found a common swift once, a husk of a bird under a bridge over the River Thames, where sunlight from the water cast bright scribbles on the arches above. I picked it up, held it in my palm, saw the dust on its feathers, its wings crossed like dull blades, its eyes tightly closed, and realized I didn't know what to do. This was a surprise. In books, I'd always been the type of gothic amateur naturalist who preserved interesting bits of the dead. I cleaned and polished fox skulls, disarticulated, dried, and kept the wings of roadkill birds. But I knew, looking at the swift, that I could not do anything like that to it. The bird was suffused with a kind of seriousness very akin to holiness. I didn't want to leave it there, so I took it home, swaddled it in a towel, and tucked it in the freezer. It was early in May the next year, as soon as I saw the first returning swifts flowing down from the clouds, that I knew what I had to do. I went to the freezer, took out the swift, and buried it in the garden, one hand width deep in earth, newly warmed by the sun. Swifts are magical in the manner of all things that exist just a little beyond understanding. Once they were called the devil's bird, perhaps because those screaming flocks of black crosses around churches seemed pulled from darkness, not light. But to me, they are creatures of the upper air, and of their nature unintelligible, which makes them more akin to angels. Unlike all other birds I knew as a child, they never descended to the ground. When I was young, I was frustrated that there was no way for me to know the swifts better. They were so fast that it was impossible to focus on their facial expressions or watch them preen through binoculars. They were only ever flickering silhouettes at 30, 40, 50 miles an hour. A shoal of birds, a pouring sheaf of identical black grains against bright clouds. There was no way to tell one bird from another, nor to watch them do anything other than move from place to place. Although sometimes, if the swifts were flying low over the rooftops, I'd see one open its mouth, and that was truly uncanny, because the gape was huge, turning the bird into something uncomfortably like a miniature basking shark. Even so, watching them with the naked eye was rewarding in how it revealed the dynamism of what before was merely blankness. Swifts weigh about 1.5 ounces. and they're surfing and tacking against the pressures of oncoming air, make visible the movings of the atmosphere. They still seem to me the closest things to aliens on Earth. I've seen them up close now, held a live grounded adult in my hands before letting it fall back into the sky. You know those deep sea fish dragged by nets from fathoms of blackness, how obvious it is that they aren't supposed to exist where they are? The adult swift was like that in reverse. Its frame was tough and spare, its feathers were bleached by the sun, its eyes seemed unable to focus on me, as if it were an entity from an alternate universe whose senses couldn't quite map onto our phenomenal world. Time ran differently for this creature. Swifts nest in obscure places, in dark and cramped spaces, hollows beneath roof tiles, behind the intakes of ventilation shafts, in the towers of churches. To reach them, they fly straight at the entrance and enter seemingly at full tilt. Their nests are made of things snatched from the air, strands of dried grass pulled aloft by thermals, molted pigeon breast feathers, flower petals, leaves, scraps of paper, even butterflies. During World War II, swifts in Denmark and Italy, tinfoil dropped from aircraft to confuse enemy radar, flashing and twirling as it fell. They mate on the wing, and while young martins and swallows are after their first flights, young swifts do not. As soon as they tip themselves free of the nest hole, they start flying. And they will not stop flying for 2 or 3 years, bathing in rain, feeding on airborne insects, winnowing fast and low to scoop fat mouthfuls of water as swallows do here in the meadow pond. In the UK, common swifts spend only a few months on their breeding grounds, another few months in winter over the forests and fields of sub-Saharan Africa, and the rest of their time they're moving, making a mockery of borders. To avoid heavy rain, which makes it impossible for them to feed, swifts with nests in English roofs will fly clockwise around low-pressure systems, traveling across Europe and back again. They love to assemble in the complicated, unstable air behind weather depressions to feast upon the abundance of insects there. They depart us quietly. By the second week of August, the skies around my home in England are suddenly empty. After which, I'll see the occasional single straggler and think, that's it, that's the last one, and watch it rise and glide through the turbulent summer air. On warm summer evenings, swifts that aren't sitting on eggs or tending their chicks fly low and fast, screaming in speeding packs around rooftops and spires. Later they gather higher in the sky, their calls now so attenuated by air and distance that to the ear they corrode into something that seems less than sound, to suspicions of dust and glass. Then all at once, as if summoned by a call or a bell, they fall silent and rise higher and higher until they disappear from view. These ascents are called vesper flights, after the Latin vesper for evening. Vespers are evening devotional prayers, the last and most solemn of the day, and I've always thought vesper flights the most beautiful phrase, an ever-falling blue. Many times I've tried to see them do it, but always the dark got too deep, or the birds skated too wide and far across the sky for me to follow. Now, this is amazing. For years, we thought vesper flights were simply swifts flying higher up to sleep on the wind. Like other birds, they can put half their brain to sleep while the other half stays awake. But it's possible that swifts properly sleep up there too, drift into REM sleep in which flying is on, at least for short periods. During World War I, a French aviator on special night operations cut his engine at 10,000 feet and glided down in silent, close circles over enemy lines, a light wind against him, the full moon overhead. Remember, these are open cockpits. We suddenly found ourselves, he wrote, among a strange flight of birds showed no noticeable reaction. They were widely scattered and only a few yards below the aircraft, showing up against a white sea of cloud underneath. He had flown into a small party of swifts in deep sleep, miniature black stars illuminated by the reflected light of the moon. He managed to catch two. I know this is impossible, but I like to imagine that he or his navigator simply stretched out a hand and picked them gently from the air. The remote air, the coldness, the stillness, and the high birds over white clouds suspended in sleep. It's an image that drifts in and out of my dreams. Helen McDonald's New York Times Magazine article goes on to describe how more modern scientists have discovered dense flocks of these birds, these swifts, at what is called the connective boundary layer, about 6,000 feet, and by flying to these heights, the swifts can not only see the distant clouds of oncoming weather systems in the twilight horizon, but they use the wind itself to forecast the weather, and therefore to forecast when and where it's best to eat. But they're doing more. As migratory birds, they need to orient themselves with basic compass mechanisms, and during these Vesper flights, swifts have access to them all, to the patterns of stars overhead and the Earth's magnetic fields below. Stars, wind, polarized light, magnetic cues, the distant stacks of clouds 100 miles away, and below them the hush of a world tilting towards sleep. What these birds are doing is flying so high that they can work out exactly where they are to know what they should do next. To get the big picture, they're quietly, perfectly orienting themselves to the world as it is. Extraordinary. Love it. Contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine, Helen McDonald. Excerpts from her The Mysterious Life of Birds Who Never Come Down.
Of angel hair, and ice cream castles in the air, and feather canyons everywhere. Looked at clouds that way, but now they only block the sun. They rain and they snow on everyone. So many things I would have done, but clouds got in my way. I've looked at clouds from both sides now, from up and down, still somehow it's cloud illusions I recall. I really don't know clouds. Moons and Junes and fairies wheels, the dizzy dancing way that you feel, as every fairy tale comes real. I've looked at love that way, but now it's just another show, and you leave them laughing when you go. And if you can, don't let them know
Don't give yourself away. I've looked at love from both sides now, from give and take. Still somehow it's love's illusions that I recall. I really don't know love. I really don't know love at all. Tears and fears and feeling proud to say I love you. Right out loud. Dreams and schemes and circus crowds. I've looked at life that way. Oh, but now, old friends, they're acting strange. And they shake their heads and they tell me that I've changed. Well, something something's gained in living every day. I've looked at life from both sides now, from win and lose, and still somehow it's life's illusions I recall. I really don't know life at all. It's life's illusions that I recall. I really don't know life. I really don't know life at all.
Poet Ann Stevenson. Born in 1933, American, but living in the UK, in the land of the Swifts, since 1962. Her poem is Swifts. Spring comes little, a little. All April it rains. The new leaves stick in their fists. New ferns still fiddleheads. But one day, the Swifts are back. Face to the sun like a child, you shout, the Swifts are back. Sure enough, Boltnock's bow to carry one sky scyther 200 miles an hour across full-blown wind fields. Swiree, swiree, another and another. It's the cut air falling in shrieks on our chimneys and roofs. The next day, a fleet of high crosses cruises in ether. These are the air pilgrims, pilots of air rivers, but a shift of wing and they're earth skimmers, daggers skillful in gliding the throw of themselves away from themselves. Quick flutter, a scimitar upsweep out of danger of touch. For earth is forbidden to them, water's forbidden to them, all air and fire. Little owlish ascetics, they outfly storms, they rush to the pillars of altitude, the thermal fountains. Here is a legend of Swifts, a parable. When the great raven bent over the earth to create the birds, the Swifts were ungrateful. They were small muddy things like shoes, with long legs and short wings. So they took themselves off to the mountains to sulk. And they stayed there. Well, said the raven, after years of this, I will give you the sky. You can have the whole sky on condition that swifts. We abhor rest. We detest the filth of growth, the sweat of sleep, soft nests in wet fields, slime hold of worms. Let us be free. Be air. So the raven took their legs and bound them to their bodies. He bent their wings like boomerangs, honed them like knives. He streamlined their feathers and stripped them of velvet. Then he released them, never to return, inscribed on their feet and wings. And so we have swifts, though in reality not parables, but bolts in the world's need, swift swifts, not in punishment, not in ecstasy, simply sleepers over oceans in the mill of the world's breathing. The grace to say they live in another firmament. The way to say the miracle will not occur, and watch the miracle. From poems 1955 to 2005, Swifts by Anne Stevenson. High. We heard Joni Mitchell, Avec Lush Orchestra, and this is Michelle Endiglio Cello on the road home.
driving, down they come, like rain on a conga drum. Forget most, remember some, and don't turn none away. Everything is not enough, and nothing is too much to bear. Where you've been is good and gone, all you keep is getting there. Oh, to live is to fly, both low and high. So shake the dust off of your wings and the sleep out of your eyes. Goodbye to all my friends, it's time to go again. Think of all the pulling and the picking down the line. I'll miss the system here, the bottom's low and the treble's clear, but it don't pay to think too much on the things you leave behind. Oh, to live is to fly, both low and high. So shake the dust off of your wings and the sleep out of your eyes. We all got holes to fill. Them holes are all as real, and some fall on you like a storm. Sometimes you dig your own. The choice is yours to make, time is yours to take. Some sail upon the sea, some toil upon the stone. Oh, to live is to fly, both low. Dust off of your wings and the sleep out of your eyes. Shake the dust off of your wings and the tears out of your eyes.
Guy Clark with Emmy Lou Harris doing some harmony work, harmony play on his To Live Is to Fly. Can't go wrong finishing the road home with some Guy Clark. I'm Bob Chelmick, and Paul Bolton is a fellow traveler who wrote a couple of notes in reaction to the road home on crows and ravens recently. You'd think I have a bird fixation. Paul Bolton wrote, "Free verse is an underappreciated art form. Hip-hop and rap and several other forms of expression are just new versions of free verse. The best and most powerful songs are poetry." Uh-oh, says Paul. I said the P word, poetry. Well, like Martin Luther King said, music is the universal language of love and the most powerful way to spread that message. When I was near your hood, and I'm not sure where Paul Bolton lives, but he talks about Whiskey Jack's, so he's closer to the mountains than I am, he said, "I yelled at the crows, two-stepping with the ravens, getting into garbage. Playful suckers, but they hate it when you don't let them pick apart your garbage. Crows versus ravens, both are smart, both are noisy. I get woken up at 4 o'clock every day by the young ones in early summer. I know they are young by their mullets." My roommate had one that would land on the handlebars of his bike and go for a cruise when he was a kid. Good viewpoint for spying treasure and free wind. And today, with crows the focus on the road home, it's no coincidence that there are a dozen crows here squawking like crazy instead of the usual four. They are really getting into the show. Great taste. They know they are the stars today. But the Whiskey Jacks and Gray Jays are joining in. It's a symphony, Paul says. I'm sure they are saying, "Thanks, Bob and the Birds." Paul Bolton. and the Corvid Show brought other responses as well. Don Curry, gotta say that y'all curate some excellent tunes to counterpoint the spoken word. Such a great show, it seems surreal. Much appreciated. Still not fond of crows, magpies, or ravens. In fact, my indigenous step cousins shoot them with impunity. Say it ain't so, Don. Thanks again for the incredible program. In fact, my wife is now a convert to the cabin in the woods. Don Curry and George D. Hi, Bob. I've been really digging your show for years about crows and ravens. Ravens are bigger, have larger heads and beaks. Crows go down south in the fall. Ravens come down from the north, spend the winter here. I love to watch them both. George, amen to that. He wrote to the email address bob@ckua.com. You can hear The Road Home anytime via roadhome.fm and take it with you anywhere via the app for your mobile device, roadhome.fm. On Instagram, the pictures, the videos, at Bob and the Dogs, B-O-B-N, the Dogs. I'm Bob Chelmick. Until we're together again on the road, mind your way.
CKUA is so grateful to the donors who contribute to the Double Your Dollars pool. These gifts and these people have real community impact, and they lead our fundraising campaigns with generosity. CKUA is powered by amazing people.
Saturday afternoons are festival afternoons all summer long on CKUA. From 4:30 to 5:30 p.m., hosts Dawn Pemberton and Grant Stovall are your guides to music and conversation, bringing you festival vibes wherever you are. And the festival radio webpage gives you all the info you need. Find out what's coming up next Saturday and visit the Festival Vendor Tent, a digital marketplace of local businesses. Find it all at ckua.com/festivalradio.
I'm Allison Brock. We all know that being stuck in traffic is no fun. But what if I were to tell you that Lisa Wilton is putting together a great program to see you through? Traffic Jams from 3 to 6 p.m. every weekday offers pop, soul, folk, jazz, and more. Lisa's choices range from the British Invasion to vintage country. And while you're stopped at another red light, you might just hear some ska or reggae. Traffic Jams, 3 to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday on CKUA.
Hi everyone, I'm Kathy Ennis, and every Monday morning from 9 to noon, we stretch our ears just a bit, listening to all kinds of sound found in CKUA's music library. I audition, select, and curate every piece in hopes of a wide-reaching and excellent listening experience. So if you can, please join me Monday mornings from 9 to noon, right here in the listening room.
You're listening to the CKUA Radio Network, Alberta's voice for music, arts, and culture. Broadcasting in Calgary at 93.7 FM, in Edmonton at 94.9 FM. Heard all around the world at CKUA.com and wherever you are on the CKUA app.